You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last Thursday, the New York City Health Department reported that the number of cases of tuberculosis in the city has risen for the first time in a decade. Around the world, there were 8 million new cases, and over 1 million people die from it each year. That's almost as high as the number of people dying from AIDS-related illnesses, the number one killers. But unlike HIV, TB can be passed simply by a cough or a sneeze. And complicating the situation, new drug-resistant strains are appearing all over the world. Jezza Newman looks at the rise of drug-resistant tuberculosis in a new documentary called TB, Silent Killer, that airs tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on PBS's Frontline series. I'm very pleased that it brings Jezza Newman to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You filmed tuberculosis victims in Swaziland. Why there?
We went to Swaziland because Swaziland actually has the highest rate per capita of TB in the world, so that's the number of people with TB set against the number of people in the country. And the government had declared it a national emergency. So had called in Doctors Without Borders to go and support them and try and tackle this. And it was through Doctors Without Borders that we therefore managed to get access to this story and to the country.
Now, how widespread is the disease there? What percentage of families in Swaziland have been affected by TB?
The outbreak in there is looking at, you know, there's numbers around sort of three quarters of the population affected in some way with TB, it's a quarter of all adults are HIV positive, and so, you know, if you look at then the sort of extended family and how that moves outwards, TB in some way affects, you know, everybody in some way or other, whether that be a direct family member or somebody that they know. There aren't many people you meet who doesn't know somebody who has TB.
So it's because of the high HIV/AIDS rate that people have been vulnerable to tuberculosis?
In the case of Swaziland, yes, that's the key contributing factor there. You know, TB is a social disease, so it's something that will find roots in a place where there are the right conditions, and the right conditions are people with lowered immune systems. So if your immune system is compromised in any way, then that's where TB disease, the bacteria will thrive. So therefore, anyone with HIV will have a lowered immune system. And traditionally, historically in the West, where when we had high levels of TB, it was because we had very poor living conditions, poor standards of nutrition. But obviously, as the West grew richer and our living conditions improved, that's why we managed to, you know, almost eliminate TB.
We didn't have as many people cooped up in one or two small rooms.
But
also, I've heard that that I and practically everyone else who grew up when I did have a little bit of tuberculosis in us, or we were exposed to it, but we've developed a resistance.
Well, what it is that, you know, the stat that they bound out is basically one in three people are carrying the bacteria in them. And what that means is that one in three of us have received the bacteria from somebody at some time. But because we're healthy and our systems are able to therefore fight the bacteria, and it never becomes the full-blown disease. And it's unlikely to if you remained healthy. But what's happening now is that we've seen mutations of TB. So it's not really ordinary TB that is the big worry at the moment. I mean, that is still an issue for many countries. However, it's these mutations where people have not been compliant to their medication and they've missed some pills here or there or thought that, well, if I don't take any today, I'll be fine. When it hasn't been fine, the drug has mutated, and it's not mutated just once, it's mutated three times. So it's gone from TB to drug resistant, then it's gone to multi-drug resistant, on to extensively drug resistant, and now they're seeing their first cases of TDR, which is totally drug resistant.
And they have the MDR, XTR, and now TDR.
Yes.
But you follow a 12-year-old girl named Nuko Bega and her 17-year-old brother, Melusi. Their parents have both died from HIV/AIDS?
No, her mother, in fact, died of TB.
Now, why is affected, but why isn't Malusi affected? Do we have any idea? Because they live together, and they've lived together with their mother who had tuberculosis.
They do, and they did. The main contributing factor is the fact that Malusi is not HIV positive, but Nokbega is. But then the reason she had it transmitted to her was because she slept in the same bed as her mother. So the amount of time she was exposed to the bacteria was far more than Malusi. So therefore, her chances of receiving bacteria from her mother increased, and that's what happened. So Nokbega would have at some point been breathed on by her mother with a breath that contained the bacteria. She caught it. Because she's HIV positive, her immune system wasn't able to fight it, and therefore she contracted the MDR virus.
Now, how did she, as a 12-year-old, become HIV positive? Does anyone know?
It was through the father. The father went to, like so many people in the country, the father went to work in the mines in South Africa. You know, he obviously, it would assume he wasn't a loyal husband, and therefore when he returned, when they had Nokbega, she was HIV positive at birth.
Now, we find out at the start of the film that she has been diagnosed with TB, and most troubling, she is diagnosed with MDR, multi-drug-resistant strain. What percentage of TB cases now are drug-resistant?
It's increasing. I mean, the trouble is there aren't hard, fast facts and figures on that, because whilst the process of diagnosing MDR means that sometimes you think someone might be MDR, but in fact the treatment isn't working, and therefore it may be something else. At other times you don't think they're MDR, and in fact they are. It's because you have to grow culture. You have to take sputum and grow a culture on it in order to have a full diagnosis. It takes time, and therefore there are also variables. So the estimate is, you know, there's a large percentage of people out there who are undiagnosed. And that is one of the sort of different advocacy groups are all sort of fighting for different things in amongst this. So you've got those that are saying these are highly toxic drugs that are, you know, nearly 40 years old. We need to do more about R&D and finding new drugs. There are others that say, hey, but the treatment is centralized. People come to hospital, and when they come, they're spreading it. We need to decentralize care. That's where we need to do the money. And then for others, you know, it's about diagnostics. It's the fact that we can't diagnose this fast enough. So the whole time you're trying to wait for results, that person is potentially spreading the disease.
My guest is Jezza Newman. His film, TB Silent Killer, will be broadcast tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on PBS stations, part of the Frontline series. Is it just one strain each of MDR, XDR? What is the other one? TDR?
TDR, yeah. No. Interestingly, you know, I learned this when I was in Swaziland, that apparently there are mutations of MDR that are unique to Swaziland. So it's been there long enough that it's mutated into a form that is undetectable. There's a new machine called a Gene Expert, and this machine can identify the bacteria involved with MDR in 2 or 3 days, as opposed to the 6 weeks it takes to grow a culture. But they have found that it's not a 100% success rate. In fact, I think it's more like a 70% success rate in detection. So you can never rely on it purely on the Gene Expert. You have to then grow the culture anyway. And they have since found that there are therefore strains of MDR that aren't detected by this machine. So obviously, if that's already occurred in Swaziland, it's perfectly reasonable that this will occur elsewhere.
Well, since all the treatments so far are the ones that were developed for old-fashioned tuberculosis, and tuberculosis was the cases were going down until fairly recently. Are any new drugs being developed for these drug-resistant versions?
There have been two new drugs recently developed. The problem is that these took a long time to get to these two, and the problem is it's still a concoction of drugs. It's not like you produce one or two drugs and that's it. You know, that now cures everything. These drugs are being produced, but they don't quite know how they fit in or what role can they play. You know, are they drugs that can take place of another drug and therefore reduce the time down of treatment? Because currently it's 2 years. If you're on MDR treatment, it's a 2-year treatment with 6 to 8 months of injections and pills throughout, which amounts to 240 injections and 14,600 pills. So, you know, a new drug may reduce that time down. A new drug could replace two drugs, and therefore you only now take, you know, four instead of six. And so it's that idea that we don't know yet. And the trouble is that R&D, research and development into new drugs, is not at the forefront of a lot of countries' agendas. And in fact, it's my understanding that for many R&D projects are having funding cut. So the problem is the speed at which things are being developed. You know, and the amount, and ultimately it comes down to money, like so many things. You know, it's how much money do you put into this to try and fix it?
In 1995, the president of the American Lung Association, Jacqueline McLeod, wrote that the United States had almost won the fight against TB until, I'm quoting, the public health system experienced cutbacks during the Reagan years. In 1992, the New York Times reported, every year between 1981 and 1987, the Reagan administration opposed the existence of a federal TB program, calling in each new budget for its repeal. Is this something that's unique to the United States? Or are other countries where TB was not seen as a problem for a while have they also cut back on funding for fighting TB?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, TB is considered, you know, a thing of the past in most developed countries.
But doesn't globalization change that?
Well, it should, you know, and that's what one is hoping for. And that's what if you speak to any of the TB advocacy groups, that's what they're fighting for. And they're saying the problem is that whilst we continue to ignore it, whilst it remains on the list of neglected diseases, you know, the problem is growing because it's not about now. Sure, if you look at the stats and facts in the United States, you wouldn't say it was a problem. And therefore, you can quite easily say, well, why spend money on it? Because there are other things that are more of a problem. But from what I've experienced, and I'm only speaking from what I've seen on the ground, I'm no expert in this, is that, you know, often we react. And when we react, it's usually too late. We're not proactive enough in what we're doing these days. So, you know, you get mass flooding and it knocks out, you know, 1,000 homes. And it was, well, what happens if we just spent the money in the first place and built the dam a little higher? You know, but we don't. We wait for that to happen and then try and fix it. The thing about MDR-TB is that when you are treated, you need to be put into, you know, isolation from the rest of your community and your family. Not only that, but there's, you know, universally, accepted bed distances. So your beds have to be 13 feet apart in your hospital. So you're talking about cutting your ward capacity down to a third of what it is now. So if you think by the time we decide that in America there's a problem, you've got a real problem because you're not going to have the bed space, you know, apart from anything else, to deal with it. And then the people who are going to be treated will be treated with the same drugs the people in our film are being treated with. And if you look at the side effects that Beggy is undergoing, that's pretty horrific.
How bad are the side effects?
The side effects can result in permanent deafness. You know, a lot of adults, a high percentage of adults, do find some form of problems with their hearing. And often full deafness. You have aching bones like a rheumatism that you'll undergo through the whole injection course. So that's 6 months where you're pretty much rendered bedridden for the first few hours after the injection and you're unable to do physical activities. So if you're somebody that survives through manual labor or has a physical job of some description, you're going to lose your job because you're not going to be able to do it. You're going to find that with a lot of the drugs, the high toxicity means you vomit a lot, you can't keep your food down. That's then a worry because obviously you don't want your immune system to get even further compromised. So there's a lot of social issues. You won't be able to go and hang out with your friends because you'll need to be kept separated from them. You know, you often won't see much of your family, and this will lead to depression in many people. You know, and that's what happens in the film, to the point that one doctor told us that someone got so depressed they hung themselves.
I opened by noting that last Thursday, the New York City Health Department reported that the number of cases of tuberculosis here in New York has risen for the first time in a decade. So I'm assuming that that's because people are coming from other parts of the world with these new strains and infecting us. So perhaps we should be aware of this problem more immediately. You interviewed an older brother and sister, Becky and Zandile, who are being treated and were willing to talk about it. Isn't it kind of taboo in Swaziland to admit that you're HIV positive or that you have TB?
Yeah, absolutely. There's huge stigmas associated with it on a couple of levels. Firstly, there's the hangover from HIV where, you know, as you witnessed here in America, you know, there's a lot of stigma attached with that disease. And so when people started to see that the people with HIV then had this new lung disease, that people started to associate the two. So the minute you said you had TB, people would then automatically assume you're HIV positive. So you really wouldn't want to tell people you had TB, otherwise people would find out your status.
On the other hand, transparency would mean that perhaps fewer people would wind up catching it.
Oh, absolutely. Transparency would have totally changed the numbers for sure, because the earlier, with like anything, the earlier you treat it, the quicker your success rate is. But not only that, the earlier you're diagnosed with it, then you're not spreading it to other people. And that's one of the people said to us, you know, those who are open would say that really we should be being tested. You know, Beggy even said that to me. I don't think it ended up in the film, but he said to me at one point that, you know, God, if only we had had regular tests, you know, if you'd just been tested, you know, once a year even, you know, at least then it would have been found so much sooner, and maybe he, you know, things would have been different. So the levels of stigma, and that's why this family is so amazing. And you know, in speaking out to us, you know, Beggy was risking the fact that some of his friends might not want to speak to him after this or have him around their houses. You know, but I mean, a lot of that is also based on lack of knowledge, lack of understanding with this disease. Which isn't surprising because you speak to anybody, even over here in the States, a lot of people don't, you know, there aren't many people who know everything about this. You know, it's just been so neglected that even those in the know don't know it all, you know. And so for me, since making the film, I learned a lot on the ground there. I've even learned a lot back here since I've been talking about it.
Now, perhaps Becky and Zandile are more open about it because they come across as quite depressed, and maybe they think there's nothing, you know, there's no future for them. Becky says, if death was something that you could build, I would have built it by now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the journeys, you know, that Becky follows in the film. You know, that's the journey, the path he goes down. He just cannot take the number of pills that you have to take. And if you figure how many people might be taking a multivitamin to support their health diet, you know, how often do you not take it or forget it or leave it at home and think, oh, I'll take that later, and you never do? And that's not saving your life. So you imagine having to take the number of pills he's having to take, which over a two-year period, like I said, that's 14,500 pills. You know, that's a lot of pills that you're taking. And it just gets you, and it got to him, and he fell into a period of depression.
When the treatment is completed, is the tuberculosis bacterium completely gone from the body, or can it return?
No, it's just defeated at that point. So it can return just as in the 1 in 3 who are carrying it in them right now across the world.
And in the absence of treatment, what's the mortality rate?
Without treatment, it's 100%. I mean, TB will kill you eventually, you know. And with MDR TB, it's going to kill you pretty quickly. and it's not a very nice death. You know, there are people, somebody who died from extensively drug-resistant TB, and it was horrific, the description of her death, you know, because you get mass organ failure, you know, and your liver starts to pack up and other parts, the other organs start to pack up, and obviously you've got your reduced lung capacity, so you're almost suffocating. So, you know, it's not a nice way to go.
Did you or your crew have any concerns about being exposed to these various drug-resistant strains of tuberculosis?
Certainly,
are there precautions you can take?
Yeah. I mean, there are precautions, and yeah, I mean, so our crew was myself, Rebecca, and Sandile. So Rebecca Stewart came from England with me, and she co-produced it. And then we had Sandile Mashaba on the ground, who was our local guy. So we were a team of three. And certainly for Becky and myself, you know, it was a choice we made, and we knew that we had healthy, you know, lives, and we had good nutrition levels, etc. So we knew our risks of actually contracting the disease were very slim. We may catch the bacteria, and that might, you know, that may come out in the future, but we'll worry about that in the future. You know, right now we knew we could do this. For Sandile, obviously, is a much bigger ask, because he would be living through the stigma associated with it. You know, the fact that if his family knew that he was working on a film about TB, he would be in houses full of TB. So for him, it was a much braver decision to be part of this. But he felt very strongly that, you know, working with us, he could see what we were trying to do. And he could see that he didn't really understand it all. And he did get this level of understanding that made him realize that, you know, this was a story that needed to be told. And the risks of him being potentially ostracized from family members was worth the risk.
Now, President Obama proposed over $25 billion in funding for HIV research and treatment for the next year. Bill Gates has funded an effort to combat malaria, has talked about eradicating that disease. Since TB is the second largest killer after AIDS, do we have any sense that anybody is planning to put any money into trying to deal with this growing problem?
Well,
could TB be eradicated as some other diseases have been?
Well, that's what I'm told. You know, that's what they firmly believe. It could be eradicated, because if you caught the strains early enough. You know, so if you start with basic ordinary TB, sure. If the people that take that have the support they need, then they'll never default in the first place, and then it won't mutate. Once you've moved on to multi-drug resistant and it's already mutated, of course, if we could develop drugs that reduce the time down to, say, 6 months, you know, you can see the end of 6 months. You know, we can all kind of see 6 months ahead, you know, see 2 years ahead. I mean, you know, if I asked you to plan something in 2 years' time, can you really conceive that and, you know, get that around? Whereas 6 months, you can sort of put a marker on that. So I think that, yeah, absolutely, if you have the drugs developed and you have the period of treatment reduced down to a level that people can see the end, then they will adhere to it and they'll stick to it, and you won't see these levels of depression. As far as funding goes, yeah, there are organizations. I mean, I know USAID are involved in R&D work, and there are other, you know, there are other government sectors involved in it. But the trouble is, like everything, my understanding is the budgets associated with this are being cut.
Noka Bega, the 12-year-old girl, has to stay in the hospital for an extended period of time, and she gets very depressed. She has to leave her brother, the only relative she has. Will she have any interaction with other kids while she's in the hospital? Will she be able to get any schooling while she's there?
No, she has no interaction with other children, and no, she doesn't have any schooling. Sadly, you know, again, it comes down to misinformation. It comes down to resources, you know. As far as the resources are concerned, it's not like the hospital is able to provide any sorts of services. You know, the hospital, the country is just about being able to keep the drug supply coming in. So the idea of extracurricular stuff, you know, schooling support in school is just not something that they can afford. But more so, you know, there is this stigma attached with it, where point the population are saying, you know, don't go near the National TB Hospital. The air is full of TB. So you'd be hard-pressed to get a teacher who's going to be prepared to go in there anyway.
Just one more thing. Britain's Sunday Times described London as the TB capital of Europe. So is tuberculosis making a comeback in Europe, or is it just England because of its far-flung Commonwealth?
No, in Europe it is seeing an increase, and London is sort of the is often the stopping point for your journey out into the rest of Europe. And sure, you know, the reasons for this increase is because of increased global travel. It is because initially because of, you know, immigrant populations coming from other places of the world. However, you know, the fact is that we are also seeing, you know, high levels of poverty. Not only did I make a documentary here in America on poverty in children, I did the same thing in the UK. And what I'm showing in both countries is that levels of poverty are on the increase. The levels of people needing to use food banks and live in family shelters, etc., are on the increase. And these are the perfect social environments that TB thrives. So whilst it might arrive in our countries and travel through the air via somebody coming in, you know, it's about what happens then, you know. And the reality is, if we start to see it decrease in our own living standards, and the newspapers in England have written articles about Dickensian living conditions found in certain housing projects in the UK, you know, then that's the breeding ground for TB.
Jesse, you may be interested to know that later in our show, in our second hour, we will have the second of a seven-part series called Strapped, A Look at Poverty in America. This time we're going to be looking at the social safety net. But tomorrow night, the film, Jesse Newman's film, TB Silent Killer, will be broadcast as part of the Frontline series on PBS at 10 p.m. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much for having me.